Sometimes the fun begins when the paved road ends. Chevy Silverado 2500 HD is made to work hard and play hard on the road or off. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for details and experience life in HD.
I need a dollar, 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 that's what I need. Hey, hey. Well, I need a dollar, 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 that's what I need. Hey, hey. Said I need a dollar, 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 that's what I need. And if I share with you my story, would you share your dollar with me?
It's 12:08. This is WGN. You are listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thank you for that. This is John Williams. I'm here weekdays from 9 to noon. And in the noon hour, from noon to 1, frequently joined by our own Orion Samuelson. Two quick announcements here, and that is, in case you missed it, Paul Harvey's Rest of the Story, the late, great Paul Harvey's Rest of the Stories, have returned to WGN in a limited run. And the first Rest of the Story story we broadcast on Bob Sirott's show this morning at 8:35. Wasn't that fun to hear? Trust me, it was. And if Orion were here, he would say that. Hey, are you there?
I'm here with you, yes, indeed. I have many stories about Paul Harvey, who was a good friend, farm boy from Oklahoma, who came to Chicago and set the broadcast world on fire.
Yeah.
Who probably did more with pauses than with spoken words.
Oh, is that what you were doing there? Oh, I just went to you and there was this pause. Was that your ode? Was that your nod to Paul Harvey?
Good thought, yes, because I learned a lot from him. As a matter of fact, as a speaker, when I would speak at events where there was a cocktail hour ahead of the program and the speech, and it would be tough to get the crowd settled down or quiet as they got ready to enjoy the evening and the program. But finally, I listened to Paul, and I paused. And the minute I paused, everybody in the room stopped and turned to look to see what was going on.
Why wasn't he talking? And then
yes,
you got their attention.
And then I got him. So my other favorite about Paul, if I can quickly do that,
sure.
Because I would introduce Paul at noon every day. He would be on the air before the noon show, so I would introduce him for his regular report. But whenever he would do an agricultural story, he would tend to give me a call to just make sure he was right on what he was saying as far as the facts and the numbers were concerned. And in the morning, my office in the tower, the phone would ring. I'd pick it up and say, "Good morning, Farm Department, Orion speaking." And he'd say, "Good morning, American." That's how he always greeted me. "Good morning, American."
Well, and I was just going to mention that it was on our noontime show here that we would do Paul Harvey's News and Comment. Do I remember that correctly?
Yep, that's correct. He would lead off the noon show, yeah. So I would get to introduce him for that. But the rest of the story was done separately.
Yeah, so. Right. That was at a different time. And that's what we're doing now. Obviously, Paul can't give you the news, but we can sure play back some of his greatest hits. And that's what we're doing on Bob Sirott Show this week and next week at least. And that starts right after the 8:30 edition of WGN Radio News. Real quick, Steve, Steve mentioned that it's National Prime Rib Day, I believe, which made me think about your ongoing news reporting about the processing plants, the packing houses. One of them, they think, is going to open back up now. Is that right?
Yes, they're anxious to get them open because you can imagine how much cash that's failing to bring into the various states. I think the governor of South Dakota said, we've got to get these plants open because we need to generate the cash statewide. And so yesterday, the Labor Department of the U.S. Government came out with its new order on behavior or how to deal with the meatpacking situation. They have a new guidance that will hopefully make it safer and cleaner for the packing house workers because, as we have said several times, you can't keep a 6-foot distance between workers because they have to be working along the line fairly closely. And so one of the stories I've seen this morning is the packing plants have put in separate plastic barriers between each worker so that he's not or she's not directly next to the person working alongside. So they're working on it, but I still feel there'll not be a meat shortage because there's a shortage of meat. But there will probably be kind of some tight supplies of meat because they can't get it in and out of the plant quickly enough because they have to do all of these other things.
Yeah. So. I can imagine, too, how hot and difficult it is to do that job anyway, let alone then wearing a face mask or a shield or more protective equipment, or if they restrict airflow with these PPEs. It would seem to me like those people need a raise, man. That's hard work.
And that is hard work. As a matter of fact, that's why we have so many migrant workers in packing houses, because American kids won't do that anymore.
Yeah.
They can go to work at McDonald's or Burger King and not have to work as hard or as long as you do when you're in a processing plant. So I hope we appreciate what the producers back to the farm and the ranch and through the processing plants and the trucking industry and everything else. It takes a whole lot to keep our food chain going the way it has gone for years, and we've tended to take it for granted. I remember the first time I went to Moscow to visit agricultural people in Russia. I remember that I saw a line outside a store, and I stopped to see what was going on. It was a line of people waiting to get into the food store to buy food.
Yeah, right.
And so I stuck around and waited until the line got down to nothing, and I walked in, and the shelves were empty. So we've never had to worry about that.
Let's not take it for granted. We'll take another report from Orion in a little bit. 1218, this is WGN Radio from Chicago Inno. Catherine Davis joins us to talk about a couple of interesting stories in the news today. And one of them, I must say, this headline sure jumps out at me, Catherine. It says Northwestern aims to make a coronavirus test as simple as a pregnancy test. Wow, what are you hearing about this?
Yeah, that's right, John. So Northwestern University biologists last week, they landed a federal grant to continue development of this really simple coronavirus test. So the idea is that it only requires one human sample, you know, similar to a pregnancy test. It can also be done at home. And, you know, patients only need to provide a nasal swab or a saliva sample. And with, kind of a quick response screen, it'll let them know just simply if they are positive or negative for COVID.
This is not an antibody test, though, but this is at least to know if you've got the virus at all, huh?
Absolutely. And it can also test if the virus is on surfaces or in water. So it can really come handy for a multitude of purposes and checking, if you've been exposed to the virus or if it's in areas around you as well.
You'll send the sample in. So you take this. It's not like, though, a pregnancy test you can find out right now. You don't have to send it in. You would have to send this into a lab, though, right?
Yeah. But the idea here, what makes it kind of so novel is that, it takes less than an hour, and it also costs less than a dollar to make. One of the big issues that coronavirus testing is facing right now is that, one, there's a lack of tests, but also they're kind of expensive to make right now, and making them inexpensive just allows more people to get tested when they need to.
And the turnaround is critical, too. I mean, some people are getting the tests, but as recently as a couple of weeks ago, it would take 2 weeks to get the results. I don't know what the turnaround is now, but are you hearing anything about that?
So, this particular test, they say it takes about an hour to get a result, so that's pretty quick. As far as when this may be available to patients, Northwestern is aiming to have it ready by the coronavirus's predicted resurgence this fall. So it won't be having these in the hands of anyone, in the next few months or even weeks, but hopefully by maybe September, October.
So that quick turnaround, though, of, say, an hour or so, evidently they would not be sending the results in the mail. They would be sending them to the lab down the hall. You would get the results that day within an hour, huh?
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Wow.
That's how it works.
Talk to me a little bit about venture capital. What's happening on that front in Chicago?
Yeah. So, you know, the interesting thing about this, you know, obviously venture capital, like every other industry in the markets, has slowed down. And it's kind of hitting the Chicago tech community pretty hard, just because 2019 was, you know, a decade high funding year. Startups raised $2.2 billion just here in Chicago. But, you know, we published a feature last week talking to a ton of VCs in town who told us that VC activity is slowing, and they kind of continue, or they expect that decline to continue, just because, you know, people aren't sure where the markets are going, and it's hard to invest right now when everything feels so uncertain.
Someday I want somebody to explain to me how the VCs actually find the companies that they choose to invest in, or how those companies find the VCs. A lot of people have really good ideas, but they don't have the capital right now. And there are people out there that want to invest in good ideas. But how do those two get together? Can I call one of these guys up and give him my good idea?
Well, you know, the interesting thing about a lot of these VCs is that they focus on a particular industry. So some of them are on, you know, green tech. Some of them on our consumer tech, or even food tech. You know, so, you know, that helps you kind of narrow down which investors to get in touch with. But, you know, in Chicago, a lot of these startups, if you're working at 1871, many of these VC firms have offices or people in the building that you can connect with and talk to. You know, it just kind of depends on what industry you're in, and then the size of the round that you're trying to raise, because there's angel firms, seed firms, and then, you know, Series A, Series B for those bigger, more sizable funding rounds.
And are the VCs usually using their own funds, or are they going outside to get other people to invest? Do they have the money, or does somebody else provide it?
Yeah, they raise their funds from, you know, wealthy people that want their money invested on their behalf. And, you know, some good news connected there is that at the end of last year, there were, you know, a few Midwest firms that raised $100 million or more. And for the most part, those venture capital firms are still required to invest that money. You know, you can expect that a lot of that money will go to their current portfolio companies to make sure they make it through coronavirus and an economic recession. But we could also see that money going into industries that proved to be really useful during coronavirus. So, you know, telemedicine, food delivery, these are kind of sectors we're seeing really thrive during coronavirus. And you can imagine that investors would want to, you know, put their money in something like that at this point.
Speaking of VCs, Quillbot. Can you talk a little bit about what Quillbot is and how much money they've raised?
Yeah. So, John, are you familiar with Grammarly at all?
Yes.
Yeah, so it's pretty similar to that. You know, for anyone that doesn't know, Grammarly is basically a browser extension that monitors what you're writing and helps you edit and refine it as you go. And Quillbot is a local startup here. They just raised $4 million last week, and they're aiming to do something very similar. You know, theirs is more of a web-based browser. You can pay a premium fee to have that embedded into your Microsoft Word or into your Google Docs. You know, but the idea is that artificial intelligence is helping you write better in English. You know, they said 60% of their users are actually non-native English speakers. And because of coronavirus and so many more people are communicating through messaging or in emails, they've seen an uptick in business, you know, just because it's kind of the nature of how we're communicating through social distancing.
Is it work in other languages? Do they have French, German, Spanish, that sort of thing?
No, right now it's just English, but I think expanding to other languages is something that they're interested in as they grow.
Right. So, but all right, 60% are non-native. That is a person from Mexico whose English is okay, but they would benefit significantly if they had somebody looking over the shoulder. But 40%, that's an interesting number to me too, are people like you and me who just want a little extra help as well, huh?
I mean, you know, I imagine this comes in handy, you know, for students. If you're doing a lot of you know, writing of term papers, graduate students writing theses, you know, even journalists, honestly, like I could probably benefit from using a service like this. I hope my grammar skills are, you know, pretty good at a professional level. But, you know, an extra set of eyes, especially if it's free, like, why not? You know what I mean?
1.5 million active users already. Wow. I mean, I'd heard about it, but I've never used it. I don't know that I've even seen QuillBot in action, but that's a lot of people.
Yeah, and 8,000 of those are actually premium subscribers. So they're paying $15 a month for additional features. But, you know, this new funding that they raised, they want to hire more employees with it. Currently, they're at about 9 people, and they'd like to get to 25 or 30 by the end of the year. You know, so kind of interesting to juxtapose that with all the bad news in coronavirus. Here's a startup that's growing and you know, has plans to actually hire people as opposed to layoffs or furloughs.
That must be fascinating software to write, because I also have a paperclip that bugs the heck out of me sometimes. I'll be writing something and it'll say, oh, are you doing this? And I'm like, no, leave. And I can't get, you know, and I don't have the patience or the skills to actually know how to navigate around something that thinks it knows better than I do. And I need all the help I can get, but sometimes it's a distraction.
Yeah, you know, I totally understand that. I think, you know, one interesting thing about QuillBot is that you could use it just in your browser. It won't necessarily be on the document that you're writing on. So, you know, if you're done with it, you can just exit out and that's that. You know, it's not necessarily something that's constantly interfering with your writing or your thought process.
One last thing, then. There's a story here about the carbon footprint. It's funny because there was a story in the New York Times over the weekend, and it said that as much as we are all about COVID-19, the thing that will truly plague humanity is global warming. But we aren't talking about our carbon footprints much these days, even though actually I guess our carbon footprints are somewhat reduced right now. What are you hearing about this?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's actually such a true point that, you know, as coronavirus is disrupting our lives so much, nothing will be quite as disruptive as climate change. And, you know, last week we wrote about a Chicago startup that is giving Chicagoans the opportunity to support renewable forms of electricity. The company is called Hero Power, and essentially they offer ComEd customers in Northern Illinois the ability to purchase renewable energy certificates from wind farms across the country. You know, this is pretty novel in the fact that users will just pay the same ComEd rate that they always have. They're not paying anything extra. So, you know, the barrier to entry is, you know, the same or low for being renewable or using renewable energy.
So I'm sorry, I'm trying to figure out what the value of this is then. So am I guaranteeing that some of my energy comes from a wind farm? Is that what I'm doing?
Yes. So essentially, you know, Hero Power works the same as ComEd in the fact that, you know, they're buying electricity from an energy market. So they're buying electricity from these wind farms, and in a certain way it gets to you as well.
So if I buy these certificates, I'm going to ensure that at least that much of ComEd's power comes not from coal, but from wind, in other words.
Yes, exactly.
Every now and then you're driving along a highway in Indiana or Western Illinois and you come across one of these wind farms. Sometimes they just take your breath away. They really are impressive. Are more of those going up? Do you know what the market is on that area right now?
You know, I'm not exactly sure. I mean, I imagine that the renewable energy sector is growing just as, you know, we know that we need these sources of energy, but not exactly sure.
Hero Power. Where did I just see that? The name of the company is called Hero Power. And is there a website I can find out more about this? How do I do this through ComEd or do I do it through the Hero Power?
So you can do it on Hero Power's website. So you go to myheropower.com. You join with your email address and they connect you through ComEd to their service.
And in theory, it does not raise my ComEd bill.
No, it should be exactly the same as it always has.
Good to know. Oh, it's all fascinating stuff. As always, from Chicago, Winnow, we appreciate your time today. Thanks for joining us, Catherine.
Yeah, thanks, John.
You bet. That's Catherine Davis. She's an associate editor there. It is also 12:33. This is WGN. Elise Glink joins us. You hear Elise, I haven't been doing this long. How long have you been chiming in on the Wintrust Business Lunch?
Oh, I don't know. It's a few years now.
Real estate, financial wellness expert, owner of Think Glink Media and Best Money Moves. I always say that when I introduce you, and I've met you many times. Tell me, though, more specifically, what do you do, Elise?
Right. So I do a couple of different things. Best Money Moves is a technology platform that helps employers measure their employees' level of financial stress and then uses AI and machine learning to dial that down by providing relevant tools, information, and calculators and the company's own benefits to the employee presented at the point of need, which is, I think, incredibly important right now. And then ThinkLink Media is a consultancy. We help financial services companies identify market opportunities and places where they can have a better connection with customers, clients, and employees.
The AI is kind of fascinating to me. You'd think that was the sort of thing that you'd be able to ferret from a conversation with them, that they would know what they need or where their problem areas are. But you use artificial intelligence in that?
We do, because with technology, it's hard to have that kind of one-on-one conversation. But by searching through our site, and we've got over 800 pieces of custom-written content and tools and calculators and video, people tell us by just where they're going on the site what they're interested in. And so we use that information plus other data that they've given us to say to them, hey, you might have not known this, but your company offers this benefit to you. Or, hey, click here for help on figuring out how to pay your bills.
Let's talk a little bit about the real estate market then. What's going on there?
Oh, well, if you are listing your home, probably a good time. Sales seem to be slower but holding up, but according to Realtor.com, which is part of the Move Group, believe it or not, Move Inc., they're seeing that for last week, new listings in the market are down 42%. And in fact, since March, the middle of March, we're seeing listings down overall close to 47%.
I was actually driving around looking at some properties this weekend because I know somebody who is going to be in the market sometime soon. It's not me, but that's always kind of fun to see what you see out there. And I sure didn't see as many signs in yards as you normally do in April.
No, there's a lot. This should be the heart of the home selling market because people are trying to, if they're going to move in time for school, you kind of need to buy your house now. You close in about 6 or 8 weeks. You figure out when you're going to move. You've got the summer to set things up, and then your kids start school late August, beginning of September. And so we should be seeing a tremendous amount of activity right now, but we're just not. What we are seeing are homes being pulled off the market as people reevaluate whether they do want to move. And homes that are selling, at least locally in Chicago, lots of them have home sale contingencies, meaning people are happy to buy this new house if their own home sells in a certain period of time.
Yeah. Well, but I also, do you suppose this also means that when we get over this hump, there's going to be a rush to market with properties? Do you think there's going to be a lot of inventory maybe in the fall?
Maybe. I wish I could be a little bit more definitive. I think so much depends on what happens when we start to open up. So right now, and we're all looking to Thursday when we're going to see the latest unemployment numbers for the week, you know, how many new people have filed for benefits in the state and in the country. We have a big focus now on getting the country opened up again, which is great, except I know even in my own small world of Best Money Moves that people who both work for us and other contractors and then other companies that we do work with, they're all worried about bringing everybody in. So it's great that the governors say we're opening up, but I think business owners are very circumspect about actually bringing people together and running the business. And that means that more people could be laid off, both at the federal, state, and city levels. And then, of course, that just helps to determine whether or not you can actually afford to buy. So I think a lot of what the fall marketplace is going to look like will depend on how comfortable we all are getting back to work and whether the consumer demand for what we offer also comes back.
Yeah, but you just said that you think some companies will worry about bringing people together. You mean physically, literally from a health standpoint?
I do. I know that my own employees are concerned about it. And we said, I think the way we're going to go is, you guys are working fine from home. Just do that till you're comfortable coming in. And even internally, we've looked around and said, well, pretty much people are spaced 6 feet apart, except when they pass each other in the hallway to go to the kitchen. So do we want to risk that people will get sick? Not because each of them are sick, but who knows what they're exposed to outside of the office. Do we want to bring that in, or do we feel better keeping everybody as safe as we can keep them? And I think that every single company I've talked to is thinking about just that. You know, nobody knows the answer yet.
Well, maybe this is something we should have thought long ago. I mean, we've been giving each other the cold and the flu forever. Maybe we would have done ourselves a favor if we had thought about this beforehand. Maybe it, you know, the mortality rate isn't as high with the cold as it is coronavirus, but I don't want to get the cold either. And I got a push from a marketing firm, from an architectural firm, saying companies today need to think about, if you're an office manager, what the new layout of your facility is going to be. I don't know if you're hearing stuff like that.
Oh, absolutely. We deal with some very large Fortune 500 companies, and the big conversation now is they went from everybody having an office to everybody sitting shoulder to shoulder, basically, in you know, little cubes, yeah. And then they recube to make everybody even closer together. Now they're thinking about, how do you bring people into that environment and not have it be a, basically a germ pool? And so some of the conversations I hear about are, do we just divide the workforce in half or in thirds or in quarters, and everybody comes in 1 week a month? Does that actually even help us? I'm also hearing companies talk about reducing their office footprint, the amount of floor space they take up, in order to, you know, basically have less people that they're going to have come in.
Yeah, we had a conversation just a couple of minutes ago about carbon footprints, and I don't know, Earth would probably breathe a sigh of relief if we all found a way to work at home a little more often, and it might be healthier for all of us. One last question. I want to go back to what we started on, real estate. So just tell me what you know then about prices. What's out there? Are the prices holding steady, or are they going up or down relative to the value of these properties?
Right now, according to Realtor.com, we're seeing sellers holding the asking prices steady, and we are seeing some sales go through, which is a really good sign. The mix of sales, homes that are for sale, is now shifting, though, a little bit towards lower-priced homes. Mm-hmm. I think people who are in upper-priced homes may be more, and this is pure conjecture, but that may be more of the white-collar world, and lower-priced or mid-priced homes are sort of the gray to blue-collar world. And we may just see some movement, more movement in terms of where people are now getting jobs, or they want to get jobs, or they need to sell simply because they can't afford the payments anymore.
Elise Glink's a real estate and financial wellness expert. Can you tell? Owner of Think Glink Media, Best Money Moves. Nice to talk to you, Elise. We'll visit again next week.
You bet, John.
12:41 on WGN. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute.
Wind the clock. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, your daily roundup of Chicago area business news. Allstate is ending its 60-year relationship with advertising company Leo Burnett. Crane says it actually cut ties months ago when it moved its creative process in-house, but it had left the door open for Burnett to handle special projects. But Allstate now has moved on to Accenture Interactive's Droga 5. Boeing says it's terminated an agreement to buy 80% of Embraer's commercial jet business for $4.2 billion. That'll help Boeing conserve cash at a time when it's facing a litany of problems, not just the economic fallout from the pandemic, but also the grounding of its 737 MAX jets. And Chicago startup Hero Power is giving Chicagoans and people around the world the ability to support renewable forms of electricity. Chicago Inno says it allows ComEd customers in northern Illinois to purchase renewable energy certificates from wind farms across the country. Joining Hero Power is free and uses the same rate as their current ComEd bill. That's the Wintrust Business Minute. I'm Steve Bertrand.
Okay, back to you, Steve Bertrand.
Got a green screen so far today. The Dow's up 249 points, the NASDAQ up 73, and the S&P 500 up 33.
Orion Samuelson's watching the agribusiness scene, of course. What's your report, O?
There is hope that the meatpacking plants that have been closed for sanitation reasons will be coming back online. Governors of South Dakota and Iowa are saying we need those processing plants back online because the state is losing a lot of revenue because they're not doing their job. And in all of the news that we've been getting agriculturally, last Friday, we bypassed the monthly cattle on feed report. But there really isn't a sharp decline in the number of cattle on feed. As of April 1st, there were 5% fewer cattle on feed than April 1st a year ago. And as of April 1st, the number of cattle placed on feed in March down only 2% from about a year ago. And the number of cattle marketed during the month of March, 13% more than a year ago. That report would be bullish when placements are at 77%, the lowest since the report began 24 years ago, and marketing's the second highest in 24 years, it should be very bullish. But when processing is down for the week, close to 27% from a year ago at this time, and feedlots across the country are hoping that any packer can fit their cattle into a processing period, even if they have to truck them several hundred miles more, then futures will begin trading either limit up or limit down. But isn't that the way the markets always go? In the cancellation postponement department, we already know the Wisconsin FFA is postponing its annual state convention in June. But right now, if you're an Illinois FFA member, you have the opportunity to make your feelings known on whether or not the Illinois FFA convention should take place. That's normally held in June, and the officials of the Illinois State FFA are meeting this week to decide if they're going to take the convention as scheduled or postpone it. If you want to make your thoughts felt on that, get in touch with the National or the Illinois FFA Center in Springfield. And there could be something positive coming out of all this mess. The resumption, not that it ever went away, but the resumption and much more on gardening. The one of the best known garden seed catalogs in the country is the W. Attlee Burpee and Company. You get that catalog in your mailbox in late winter, early spring. Well, that company is 144 years old, but in March, they sold more garden seed than they have served in any one month in the 144-year history of the company. So we could see an increase with the togetherness at home, teaching the kids how their food gets produced, where it comes from, doesn't come from a box in a supermarket. And so maybe the growth in gardening could be one of the few positive
Orion events. Is that fruits and vegetables, or is that flowers and herbs and things like that?
Well, they sell all of them, but according to the story I saw, it was basically the fruits and vegetables.
How about that? Yeah,
yeah,
no kidding.
So maybe we're going back to the garden. So as I'm telling people, get out your hoe and your liniment for the back, and let's go to work and garden again.
Sounds good, oh. Yeah, my friend Thomas Jefferson would second that motion. It's 1247. Thank you, sir. Still to come, Amy Guth on WGN. Kind of interesting looking at the text line, 312-981-7200. We were talking a minute ago about how you can buy those wind power certificates from ComEd, and some of our listeners have done that and liked the results. John, more wind farms are going up on US 41. We were talking about the proliferation of those. And this is just a note about one of our sponsors. John, I'm so excited. Executive Green Carpet Clean is here right now. Smile face, smile face. Okay, Amy Guth joins us now on WGN to talk about some businesses. Hey, Amy, how are you today?
Hey, how's it going? Happy Monday.
Yeah, likewise. This is interesting. Another company is returning its small business loan. Is that right?
That's right. This one is very interesting. So we talked last week about how Shake Shack right away said, you know what, we've actually secured some other funding sources. We're going to return that Paycheck Protection Program $10 million loan. We're good. We really hope that this goes to some smaller businesses that might be more worthy of it and not have these other outlets that we do. Immediately, a ton of backlash started occurring to locally based Potbelly, who said, we're not going to return it. We got this fair and square. That's not what we're doing. And then Saturday, they changed their tune. They didn't say exactly if that was about bowing to pressure or what that was over, but they did decide, you know what, we're going to give it back. We're a large company. You know, some details emerged about what they had on the books. They had several million dollars on the books as of December 2019, as we talked about. So I think there was a growing sentiment that, like, hey, this is for small businesses. Of course, the second wave of the PPP starts today. And again, there's speculation that it's going to run really quickly, going to run dry. But another part of that that I'm looking at is some legal action has emerged. One of those, a lawsuit that's seeking class action status against Chase Bank, saying, hey, you gave money to some of these big guys and really not in, in a fair proportion to some of the small businesses who are really, really struggling. So that's going to be something to watch. I think that's going to be a long, drawn-out process. Yeah. Obviously, that's going to be a big deal and a very precedent-setting case, but I think that's going to be one to watch for sure.
Well, if some of these chains, you know, if they want to redistribute the money that they get as a corporation back to the franchises, I know some of those are corporate-owned stores, but if they want to filter it back down, those are mom-and-pop shops, essentially, some of these. I'm not exactly sure what the business model is for Potbelly, but sometimes you have a lot of personal investment. You're running your own little store there with somebody else's name on it. I'm okay if they take the money if it goes that way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's been the case for some of these larger chains where people were going, hey, wait a minute, that's a huge chain. Why are they getting that? I think that's how some of that has been explained, going, well, you know, we have franchisees who themselves are really small businesses with small margins, just like a lot of restaurants have. It's generally working in that 3-5% margin space. So I think a lot of bigger companies have had to really explain themselves and explain their business models to avoid that kind of backlash. But, you know, just over the weekend, it was a big surprise because last week Potbelly was saying, no, we're doing this. This is what we're doing. We need to help our workers, and this is why we sought it. And then turning around and changing course on that on Saturday.
Orion was talking a little while ago, Amy, about the tightening of the meat supplies. Some of these packing houses are opening back up as soon as they can, but there's going to be a crush now because of the virus. So what does that mean for alternative meat sources?
Yeah, I think this is a really interesting story. So essentially what's happening is we're seeing some of those plant-based protein manufacturers suddenly gain a lot of traction. Beyond Meat, their stock jumped 41% last week, which is their biggest weekly gain since going public in May last year. So that was almost immediately following that news of, hey, there could be some shortage of pork and beef products in the U.S. in the pretty near future. So I think that's kind of an interesting thing to watch. Now, analysts are not saying, hey, hop in and grab that stock just yet, because such a large piece of Beyond Meat's livelihood is attached to the restaurant industry. There's a lot of restaurants who felt that, you know, consumers really want that plant-based alternative to meat products on their menu, so they've added that. So it's, it may not be the boon that it looks like yet, but that's still a pretty substantial jump. And if you're just kind of looking at, like, there's a Bloomberg chart that they have that kind of looking at what that looks like, and it really was a pretty significant jump almost immediately after that speculation started to kind of talk about this looming specter of a meat shortage.
Yeah, no kidding. 41% is noticeable, right? When your stock jumps
that. Yeah, that's a lot.
That's not sales increased 41%, though.
That's right. That's right. And that's just about the surge in demand around the stock. So that's around people going, hey, you know what? If there's going to be a shortage of meat, maybe I'll go get this plant-based, alternative meat stock. So it's about the stock movement, not necessarily their revenue. That remains to be seen. We'll see how that shakes out. I don't think it will be huge because of, you know, as I was describing with the demand in restaurants,
right,
and of course so many restaurants unable to open, but it will be interesting to watch what that does. I mean, what I think is really interesting about covering business stories and watching them is the story that is told through numbers, because you can see, okay, this happened, and as a result, this is what the consumer mindset did. And as much as we think about it just kind of being all business, there's always a very human, emotional mind piece to almost every business story, I think.
Well, that's an example of that. You've been following Boeing and the airline industry for us. What are you hearing today?
Yeah, so earlier today was their annual meeting, and the CEO, David Calhoun, he had a very grim assessment of air travel. That, of course, echoes what a lot of carriers have been saying. He really did not feel like it was going to stabilize anytime soon. He said, you know, his exact words are, it is difficult to estimate when this situation will stabilize, but when it does, the commercial market will be smaller and customer needs will be different. So, you know, things he's got to look at from Boeing's point of view is his customers are the carriers, and so it's this, you know, trickle-down effect that he really is foretells a much smaller aviation industry by the time all of this is over, and not a very quick recovery. I think the carriers and Boeing and kind of the larger aviation industry overall is bracing for something much smaller. And even once restrictions are lifted, even once we start to phase out restrictions and people do start to travel, we have to treat travel in a couple different ways. Business travel will resume first. That's exactly what happened after 9/11 and after the recession of 08-09. We saw, you know, a little bit of a dip. Not many people could afford to take a vacation, things like that. But in this case, as the case of a global, you know, this virus, that's going to be different. It's going to take quite a while, is what Boeing's feeling is, before consumers are feeling really confident about getting on planes at the same rate. So he's predicting quite a long time before travel will return to those pre-pandemic levels of early 2019 or late 2019 and early 2020.
Just time for a headline here, Amy, but we should mention it. I know you pointed out to us that Aon's going to cut starting May 1st. 20%,
right.
20% for most employees, huh?
They're going to cut pay, and the CEO has positioned this very much like this is the alternative to mass layoffs. So yeah, they're going to cut 20%. They're based in London, but they employ about 5,000 in the local area. Now, one thing to note here is that they did a market analysis, and of each of their markets, they looked at what is the cost of living. So about 30% of those people are not going to see their pay change that much of their workforce because it would put them below the poverty line. So this is people at very entry-level jobs and other jobs like that in the company in the lower end of that range. We won't see that pay change, but overall, 20% of worker pay. And the CEO and the executive team, right alongside them, they're going to take a 50% pay cut. Anytime you see an executive team doing that, you know it's really a tough time for a company.
And no kidding. Amy Gu. Thank you, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.